Good evening.
Radio.
Good evening and welcome. How's everybody going tonight? This is the first episode of the Bard's Grove with our good friend Kathy Pagano with us. She's on a well-deserved vacation over across the water, and we'll be joined by some really good guests. So it's going to be really awesome. And we've got some fine storytellers tonight. We've got the charming and talented Lily. And we've also got a wonderful woman named Margaret, also, who's going to join us tonight. And we have some really interesting stories to tell you. They both have brought very special yarns to share with you. And this next month, I want you to pay special attention to the show, because we bring on some new voices. And I can guarantee you, you're going to really, really enjoy this. There's so many wonderful things going on, and we've got a fine selection of stories for you. I'll be doing a story later in the evening called The Story of the Brother Who Knew That Good Was Stronger Than Evil. It's so important that we bring, in this era, stories about how people help each other, how people overcome obstacles, because there's so much in the world right now of defeatism and so much of the obstacles and so much talk about the difficulties that we face. And those are all real and those are all true. And as wonderful and as exciting as that is, that we also want to tell people that we've overcome so many things in the past. And it's just a really important time that we're in right now. And we want to make sure that we tell those good stories too. Those stories about how we overcome problems in the past and how we overcome obstacles. I think we've got stories from the East tonight, and that's going to be pretty exciting. Lillian, I think, is going to call us in just a couple minutes. And as you probably know, we've entered into Libra, and the search for justice is all around us. There's stories in the news all around about justice and seeking justice and people demanding justice. And I think one of the positive things that we can do is we can offer justice. And we can be the judicial hand. We can be the generous hand. And we can act that part that we would want to see ourselves. Act that part of bringing ourselves and giving justice to our friends, to our associates, to our coworkers, and making sure that we act with a judicial thought in mind, with that thought of being the gentle and beneficent judge. Those are important roles for us, and to make sure that we try to behave in an even-handed fashion. I have the good fortune to be a teacher in different situations in my life currently. And it's always so important that we act even-handedly, that we act with generosity, though. And when I'm teaching us, or I'm teaching Wow. Okay. Well, it looks like we had a little disconnection problem. Hopefully we'll be still on the air. And well, hopefully the show's still going out. And we've got a little internet trouble up here in the studio. So hopefully we managed to get that connectivity going again. So hopefully we'll have that call in from just a couple minutes from our good friend Lillian. And we'll see if we can get her on the line. And hopefully she'll call in and get that first story going. Give me just a moment, and we'll put a little music on for a second and see if we can get Lillian on the air.
There's a better world is to come and tell you why. There's a better world is to come and tell you why. We will feed 'em on the land, on the sea, and in the sky. There's tell you why. There's a better world that's coming, don't you?
There we go. We've got Lillian. Lillian, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Oh, it's always an adventure here in the Bard's Grove. You know, the birds are singing and the animals are prowling, and we're welcoming a wonderful new storyteller. Lillian, tell us a bit about yourself.
Oh, gosh, there's not much to tell. I'm just sitting over here in my lair over by the Atlantic Ocean and enjoying life, enjoying the sunshine, and looking forward to telling this story.
Well, tell us, what's your story about?
Okay. According to Buddhist tradition, Shakyamuni Buddha appeared in the world to show us the path of release from suffering. To reach this goal, a practitioner or aspiring bodhisattva relies on the teachings of the Buddhas and other bodhisattvas of old. One of the most revered bodhisattvas is Arahant Avalokiteshvara, also known as Chenzurin Kuanyin Kusa, and we'll begin with the coming of Avalokiteshvara. And the second half of the tale comes from the chapter 12 of the Sadharma Pundarika Sutra, also known as the Lotus Sutra, wherein a female is grouped in discussion together with an evil man. In India, at that time, women were considered to be sin incarnate and regarded as obstacles to men practicing religious discipline. It was a thought that a woman could never be saved from suffering. You have to look at the fable from that perspective, from the perspective of the audience at the time and their capacity to understand. And we'll see that this lady was able to come of age. This is one of the first tellings during the patriarchal age of women's rights coming to the forefront through the Buddha.
Wow, that sounds great. So tell us the story.
Okay. In the pure land of Padmavati, there was a universal monarch called Gongpu Cho. This king wished for a son. He made many offerings to the triple gems to grant him his wish, and for each offering he would send his servants to gather lotus flowers. On one occasion, a servant found a giant lotus at the lake. The size of its petals was like vulture's wings, and it was about to bloom. He rushed back to inform the king. The king felt this was a sign that his wish for a son would be granted. He went with his entire entourage of ministers to the lake with many offerings, and there they found the giant lotus blooming. Within its petals, there was a boy of about 16 years old. His body was light-colored, and he was adorned with the physical marks of perfection of a Buddha. Light was radiating from his body. The boy exclaimed, "I feel pity for all the sentient beings who are suffering so much." The king and his entourage made many offerings and protestations to the boy and invited him to the palace. The king gave him the name Lotus Born, or Essence of Lotus, because of his miraculous fruit. He also consulted his master, Buddha Amitabha, on this matter. The Buddha told the king that this boy is a manifestation of all the Buddhas. He's also the manifestation of the heart of the Buddhas. His name, Avalokiteshvara, and he is to fulfill the purpose of all sentient beings as vast as space. One full moon, the king made great offerings to the triple gem and Avalokiteshvara. At that moment, Avalokiteshvara recalled his mission. He had to liberate all sentient beings from their sufferings. With his great compassion, he gazed at the sentient beings within the three realms of desire, form, and formlessness. He saw their defilement and suffering. He saw that their desires are like waterfalls. Their hatred is like a blazing fire. Their ignorance shrouded them like clouds of darkness. Their pride is as solid as the mountain, and their jealousy as rapid as the wind. The chain of self or ego ties each to every sentient being to the cycle of birth and death. The sufferings they experience are as if they have fallen into the blazing fire. Great compassion arises, and tears flow from Avalokiteshvara's eyes. He made great offerings and protestations to the Buddha of the 10 directions and paid for their guidance and how he could benefit all these suffering beings. The Buddha responded in unison. If you wish to benefit all these sentient beings, you must be motivated by loving kindness and compassion. Do not be tired of this work, do not give up. Again, he asked, how should I develop loving kindness and compassion? Buddha Amitabha appeared to instruct Avalokiteshvara on the practice and empowered him to fulfill his mission. With his blessing, Avalokiteshvara aspired further. From each and every pore of my body, may I manifest Buddhas and Bodhisattvas according to the needs of all the sentient beings. With these manifestations, may I liberate all sentient beings without leaving anyone behind. Buddha Amitabha blessed his aspirations and empowered him further. Avalokiteshvara then radiated six lights from his body to the six realms of beings. Each light manifests as one Buddha. In the Tiantai school, six forms of Avalokiteshvara are defined. Each of the Bodhisattva's six qualities are said to break the hindrances of the six realms of existence. Hell beings, pretas, animals, humans, asuras, and devas. These six qualities are listed below. Great compassion, great loving kindness, lion courage, universal light, leaders of devas and human beings, and the great omnipresence. The six Buddhas include Buddha Shakyamuni in the human realm to subdue their desire and relieve them from birth, old age, sickness, and death. Countless sentient beings were thus liberated. Avalokiteshvara, which translates to Lord who looks down, is a Bodhisattva who embodies the compassion of all the Buddhas. He has 33 different manifestations, including female manifestations, to suit the minds of various beings. Amitabha Buddha manifested six syllables of Om Mani Padme Om in the form of light, which came into the world to mount the Chola. He also instructed Avalokiteshvara to go there to liberate all the sentient beings. Heralding Avalokiteshvara's coming, the whole world was filled with wondrous signs and brilliant light, which surpassed the sun and moon. During that time, Shakyamuni Buddha was giving a teaching at Mount Malaya. One of the Bodhisattvas noticed the brilliant light. He kneeled down and asked the Buddha for the reason. Shakyamuni Buddha replied, from here to the west beyond the countless universes, there is a place called Padmavati. At that place, there is a Buddha known as Amitabha, and he has a Bodhisattva called Avalokiteshvara. This Bodhisattva has come to the world to Mount Pichala, where he will benefit countless sentient beings. He is the most perfect among all the Bodhisattvas. He manifests 1,000 Buddhas pervading the whole universe in order to liberate all sentient beings. After some time, Avalokiteshvara thought that he would have reduced significantly the number of suffering sentient beings. When he gazed with his wisdom eye from Mount Meru, he was disappointed to find that the numbers had not decreased. He radiated his light to the six realms another three times to liberate the sentient beings. When he checked again, he was disappointed. With despair, he thought, truly, as what the Tathagata has spoken, space is infinite. So likewise, sentient beings are also infinite. I have liberated so many beings, and yet their numbers have not decreased. Buddha Amitabha then instructed, there is no beginning to samsara. There is no end to samsara. You must benefit sentient beings until samsara ends. Amitabha Buddha manifested the syllables Om Mani Padme Om again in the form of light. Amitabha became known as the mistress of the southern seas and patroness of fishermen. In this form, she was Kuan Yin, the hero of prize, a very special fish. In this particular instance, she heard the cries of the third son of the Dragon King, the ruler of the Eastern Sea, who had been out swimming incognito disguised as a carp. Being stuck on land, he was unable to transform back into his dragon form. His father, the Dragon King, an ancient being known for his high spirituality, wisdom, strength, and divine powers of transformation, was unable to do anything while his son was on land. Distressed, the son called out to all of heaven and earth. Hearing this cry, Avalokiteshvara quickly sent Sun Tai, her emissary, to recover the fish and give him all the money, and she gave him all the money she had. The The fish at this point was about to be sold in the market. It was causing quite a stir because it was alive hours after being caught. This drew a much larger crowd than usual at the market. Many people decided that this prodigious situation meant that eating the fish would grant them immortality, and so all present wanted to buy the fish. Soon a bidding war started, and Chan Tai was easily outbid. Chan Tai begged the fish seller to spare the life of the fish. The crowd, now angry at someone so daring, was about to cry him away from the fish, when Avalokiteshvara projected her voice from far away, saying, "A life should definitely belong to the one who tries to save it, not the one who tries to take it." The crowd, realizing their shameful actions and desires, dispersed. Chan Tai brought the fish back to Avalokiteshvara, who promptly returned it to the sea. There, the fish transformed back into a dragon and returned home. In gratitude for saving his son, the Dragon King sent his daughter, a girl called Lin Yun, a dragon girl, to present Avalokiteshvara the Pearl of Life, which was a precious jewel owned by the Dragon King that constantly shone. Lin Yun, overwhelmed by the presence of Avalokiteshvara, asked to be her disciple so that she might study the Buddha. Avalokiteshvara accepted her offer with just one request, that Lin Yun be the owner of the Pearl of Life. Now, Devadatta was a cousin of the Buddha Shakyamuni, but he was the most wicked and cruel man. He was jealous of the fact that Shakyamuni was looked up to as the Buddha and adored by so many people in that age, around 3,000 years ago. Being ambitious to take the place of the Buddha, he often set traps, slandering and defaming him. He even attempted several times to kill the Buddha. Once he rolled a boulder down onto the road when the Buddha was passing. Once he tried to make an elephant drunk so that it would run amok and attack the Buddha. Once he administered poison to Shakyamuni. Once he shot at the Buddha with his bow. Buddha, addressing the Bodhisattvas, in the being, said, "In the past, through limitless eons, I sought the Dharma Flowers Sutra without laxness or weariness. For many eons, I was a king and vowed to seek supreme Bodhi with an unretreating mind. Wishing to perform the six paramitas, I diligently practiced giving, my mind not begrudging elephants, horses, the seven precious things, country, cities, wives, children, slave servants, even my head, eyes, marrow, brain, body, flesh, hands, and feet, not sparing even life itself. The people of that time had a limitless lifespan. For the sake of the Dharma, or in other words, the law, I renounced the royal position, leaving the government to the crown prince. I beat upon the Dharma drum, announcing my search for the Dharma in four directions, saying, 'Whoever can speak the great vehicle for me, for him I will act as a servant for the rest of my life.' At that time, a seer came forth and spoke to the king, saying, 'I have a great vehicle scripture by the name of the wonderful Dharma Lotus Flower Sutra. If you do not obey me, I will expound it for you.' When I, the king, heard the seer's words, I jumped for joy. I then followed the seer, supplying all of his needs, picking fruit, drawing water, gathering firewood, even preparing food, even offering my own body as a couch for him, feeling no weariness in body or mind. I served him for 1,000 years for the sake of the Dharma, diligently waiting upon him so he lacked nothing. The king was I, myself, in a former life, and the seer was the present Devadatta. It is because of my good and wise advisor, Devadatta, that I have perfected the six paramitas of kindness, compassion, joy, and giving, as well as 32 marks and 80 fine characteristics, coloring of burnished purple gold, the 10 colors, the 4 fearlessnesses, the 4 dharmas of attraction, the 18 unshared dharmas, and the power of the way of spiritual penetration, the accomplishment of equal, proper enlightenment, and the vast rescue of living beings. All this came about because of my good and wise advisor, Devadatta." The Buddha told the bhikshu in the future, if a good man or good woman hears the Devadatta chapter, the wonderful Dharma Flower Sutra, and with a pure mind believes and reveres it, having no doubt he will not fall into hell, into the realms of hungry ghosts, or into animal realms. He will be born in the presence of the Buddha of the ten directions, always here in the future wherever he may be born. Should he be reborn among humans and gods, he will receive supreme and settled bliss. If born in the presence of the Buddha, he will be born by transformation from the lotus flower. At that time, a bodhisattva attendant of many jewels will honor one. From the lower regions by the name of wisdom accumulated, spoke to the Buddha many jewels, saying, "Let's return to our land." But Shakyamuni Buddha said to wisdom accumulated, "Good son, wait a while. Here is the bodhisattva Manjushri. First meet and discuss with him the wonderful law, and then return to your own land." Sitting on a thousand-petal lotus as large as a carriage wheel, along with the bodhisattvas who accompanied him, also sitting on jeweled lotuses, spontaneously rose up out of the great sea from the Sagara Dragon Palace. They rose high into the air and went to Magic Vulture Mountain. Descending from his lotus, he went before the Buddha and bowed in worship at the feet of the two world-honored ones. Having paid his respects, he went up to wisdom accumulation, and when they had inquired of each other's welfare, moved to one side and sat down. Wisdom accumulated Bodhisattva asked Manjushri, "Humane one, how many living beings have you taught there in the dragon's palace?" Manjushri replied, "An unlimited, unreckonable number, one that cannot be expressed in words or fathomed by the mind. Wait just a moment, and you will have proof for yourself." Before he had finished speaking, countless bodhisattvas sitting upon jeweled lotuses rose up out of the sea, went to Magic Vulture Mountain, and hovered there in space. These bodhisattvas have been taught and crossed over by Manjushri Bodhisattva. All of them have perfected the bodhisattvas' practices and were discussing among themselves the six paramitas. Those who had been sound hearers were in empty space expounding upon the practices of sound hearers. All of them were now cultivating the principle of emptiness of the great vehicle. Manjushri Bodhisattva said to wisdom accumulation, "Such is the work of teaching and transforming that I have done from within this day." At that time, wisdom accumulation spoke these three verses of praise. "Oh, greatly wise, virtuous, and courageous one, you have taught and saved countless beings. Now this great assembly and I have seen this for ourselves. Proclaim the real marked principle. Open the Dharma of one vehicle. You are a guide for all living beings. Lead them quickly to Bodhi's realization." Manjushri said, "While in the sea, I have proclaimed and taught only the wonderful Dharma Lotus Fruit Flower Sutra." Wisdom accumulation asked Manjushri, "This sutra is profoundly subtle. Among all the sutras, it is a jewel rarely found in the world. Is there any living being who can, through diligence and vigor, cultivate the sutra and quickly attain Buddhahood?" Manjushri said, "There is the dragon king's daughter, who is just 8 years old. She has the faculties, conduct, and karma of living beings and has attained Dharani. She is able to receive and uphold the entire storehouse of extremely profound secrets spoken by the Buddha. She has deeply entered jhana, samadhi, and thoroughly penetrated all dharma. In the space of akshana, she brought the Bodhi mind and attained to irreversibility. Her eloquence is unobstructed, and she is compassionately mindful of all living beings as if they were her children. Her merit and virtue is complete. The thoughts of her mind and the words from her mouth are subtle, wonderful, and expansive. She is compassionate, humane, and yielding, harmonious and refined in mind and will, and she is able to arrive at Bodhi." Wisdom accumulated Bodhisattva said, "I have seen the thus come one Shakyamuni practicing difficult ascetic practices throughout limitless eons, accumulating merit and virtue as he sought Bodhi without ever resting. As I observed the 3,000 great thousand worlds, there is no place, not even one the size of a mustard seed, wherein as a Bodhisattva he did not renounce his life for the sake of living beings. Only after that did he attain Bodhi way. I do not believe that this girl can accomplish proper enlightenment in the space of an instant." They had not yet finished their words before Lumye, the Dragon King's daughter, suddenly appeared before them, bowing with her head at their feet, and drew to one side to speak these verses. having deeply understood the marks of the senses of blessing, by shining throughout the 10 directions, now the wondrous pure Dharma body is complete with the 32 marks, the 8 minor characteristics, the adorned Dharma body, is honored and looked upon by gods and humans and revered for all the dragons and spirits as varieties of beings. None fail to respect and revere it. Hearing about the realization of Bodhi, which only a Buddha can certify to, I proclaim the great vehicle teaching which liberates suffering living beings. At that time, Shariputra spoke to Lemu, saying, "You claim quick attainment to the supreme path. This is difficult to believe. Why? The body of a woman is filthy and not a vessel for Dharma. How can you attain to the supreme Bodhi? The Buddha path is remote and distant. Only after one has passed through limitless eons, diligently bearing sufferings and accumulating conduct, perfecting one's cultivation of all the paramitas, can one attain realization. What is more, woman's body has 5 obstacles. She cannot become a Brahma heaven king. She cannot become a chakra. She cannot become a Mara king. She cannot become a wheel-turning sage. She cannot become a Buddha. How can a woman quickly realize Buddhahood?" Now the Dragon King had a precious pearl that's worth equal to the entire system of the 3,000 great size of world. You remember, she was given that. But she took before the Buddha and presented it to him. The Buddha immediately accepted. The Dragon King then said to Wisdom Accumulation and the Venerable Shariputra, "I just offered this precious pearl to the world-honored one, and he accepted it. Was that quick or not?" "Very quick," they answered. Then Mu said, "With all your spiritual powers, watch as I become a Buddha even more quickly than that." At that moment, the entire assembly saw the dragon girl suddenly transform into a man and perfect the Bodhisattva conduct. Instantly, she was off to the south, to the world without silk, where seated on a jeweled lotus, she accomplished 8 and proper enlightenment, equal and proper enlightenment, and embodied the 32 marks and 80 minor characteristics. There, for the sake of all living beings throughout the 10 directions, she proceeded to claim the wonderful Dharma. While the Bodhisattva song heroes, gods, dragons, and the rest of the 8 soul division, both humans and non-humans in the Saha world, all watched from a distance as the dragon girl became a Buddha and spoke the Dharma, or the law. For all the gods and humans, they rejoiced exceedingly and reverently, made obeisance from afar. Hearing that Dharma, limitless living beings understood and awoke, attaining to irreversibility, never sliding back into mortality. Countless living beings received predictions of the way. The world without silk placed in 6 directions, while in the Saha world, 3,000 living beings came to dwell on the ground of irreversibility, and 3,000 living beings brought forth the Bodhi mind and gained predictions. Wisdom accumulated Bodhisattva, Shariputra, and the entire assembly silently and deeply believed and accepted in the greatness of the power of the Buddha teaching. There you have it.
Wow, that was wonderful.
Thank you
so very much.
You're welcome.
That's a wonderful teaching. The reckoning or the recognizing that women can be as spiritual as men can be. I think that's marvelous.
Yep, it's the transcendence of the difference between male and female. And in fact, Shakyamuni Buddha asserted that all animals, birds, worms, plants, and trees, as well as human beings, possess the capacity to become Buddhas. They all contain the Buddha nature.
Absolutely. That same light, that same energy permeates things.
I'm sorry, I'm having difficulty hearing you.
I'm going to do that again.
I'm having a great difficulty hearing you.
My internet connection isn't ideal because I've lost my main studio connection, and I'm having to essentially take advantage of the generosity of one of my neighbors and connecting.
Well, you're back now. I hear you very clearly right now.
Okay. Well, that's good. That's good. How long have you been a student of Buddhism?
Oh, gosh. I would say I started studying it on and off maybe in the 90s, in the mid-90s.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I can't say that's the only path I've studied. I had the great fortune of being able to sit for an entire year with a religious historian and to see from that perspective how similar the stories are, manifest in so many different religions, teaching the same things. And so I have a great appreciation for the equality of all living beings and for the value of all of the teachings.
That is fantastic. The there's nothing like the perspective you get from studying a variety of the world's religions. I've made it an important part of my own philosophical and religious studies to read very widely. Read the Quran, the Upanishads, the Ramayana, the Egyptian Book of the Dead, the Tibetan Book of the Dead. I've read widely in Catholic teachings and Catholic saints. I've read Martin Luther's work. I've read, of course, the Wiccan and occult traditions. I've read Native American work. All of this, I think, gives one a breadth of experience. And certainly lead the death of dogma, I think.
Yes, I should hope so. I think we all need to get far, far, far past that.
Well, I'm going to put on a little bit of music and try to contact our dear Margaret and see if she's going to join us. And if not, I'll begin telling my story in just a minute. Can you hang around, my dear?
I would love to hang around.
Okay, great. I'm going to put on some music for just a few minutes, and I'll be right back.
Okay, then.
Thank you.
well. That was an exciting stop to that. It seems like quite a true mark. So we... Okay, well, that was an interesting interruption. A story called The Story of the Brother Who Knew Good Stronger Than Evil. There was once a rich man who had two sons. The older son Wow, that's exciting. Okay. Once again, let's give that a try. The story of the brother who knew that the good was stronger than evil. There was once a rich man who had two sons. The older son was overbearing, greedy, and covetous. He was dishonest, too, and thought nothing of taking things that belonged to others. The younger brother was gentle and kind. He was always prepared to share what he had, and was never known to cheat or steal. He's little better than a fool, the older brother used to say of him scornfully, and when the brothers demanded, their old father died, leaving directions that he divide his wits between them. Share and share alike. Nonsense, the older brother said. That's what we see. Every day they come along, he's all soon, more saving, be all gone. No. I'll give three gold horses to get it. If I won't give that. He said to the younger brother, you're a fool. You won't have your father's daughter. I'll give you three golden ducats and you're wrong, right? Just as I am speaking with you now, right? And the last verse in my life, I said, don't you, oh God, bless me, fool, the devil. No, brother, the other said, you're wrong, because it's written, just put it stronger than evil. I'm sure. Well then, let's make a deal. I'll wager you gold bucket. Evil is true. Well, if the point is true, so I agree. I remember the man who's dumb. He wasn't really a monk, but he was the devil himself disguised in the hat of a monk. The old brother put the case to the false monk at once answered. Oh, that's an easy question to decide. Of course, evil is stronger than good. in this world. Without a word, the younger brother took out one of his gold buckets and handed it over. Now, said the older one, are you convinced? No, brother, I am not. No matter what this monk says, I know that good is stronger than evil. Oh, you do you? Well, I suppose we repeat the wager and ask the next man we meet to decide between us. Very well, brother, I'm willing. The next man they overtook looked like an old farmer, but in reality he was the devil again who had taken the guise of a farmer. They put a question to him, and of course the devil made the same answer. Evil is stronger than good in this world. So again the younger brother paid the wager, but he insisted he still believed that good was stronger than evil. Well, we'll make a third wager, the older brother said. And with the devil's help, the older brother won the third gold ducat, which was all the money the younger brother had. Well, then the older brother suggested they wager their horses, and the devil, disguised in another form, again acted as umpire, and the younger one, of course, lost his horse. Well, I have nothing more to lose, he said, but I am still so sure that good is stronger than evil, I'm willing to wager the very eyes out of my head. Well, the more fool you, the other one cried brutally, and without another word, he knocked his younger brother down and gouged out his eyes. Now let God take care of you if he can. As for me, I put my trust in the devil. God forgive you for speaking to the younger brother. Whatever does not, nothing can harm me. I'm strong, I'm rich, and I know how to take care of myself. As for you, poor blind, for anybody to be right, all I have you, brother, is that you lead me to the spring that under the furry farmer, they convey my wounds and sissies, and take my man by the hand, and for the rest, God will have to take care of you. With that, he led him over to the fir tree and left him. The blinded man groped his way to the spring and bathed his wounds, then sat down to the tree and prayed to God for help and protection. When night fell, he was asleep. He slept until midnight. When he came down to voice it, company of us, walkers, being baby. He was blind, as you remember. So he couldn't see real firm. He knew that he came from sweet water and murmuring treetops. Human voices are never half so lovely. Yes, they must be Vilas from the mountains and the woods. Oh, sisters, cried one of them, if only men knew that when we bathed in this spring, they could tomorrow come and be healed in its waters. The maimed and the halt, the blind. Tomorrow this water would heal even the king's daughter, who was afflicted with leprosy. And when they were gone, the blind man crept down to the spring and bathed his face. The first time the healing water, his wounds closed and his sight was restored. With a heart full of gratitude, he knelt down and thanked God for the miracle. And the next morning came, he filled a vessel with precious water and brought it to the king's palace. Tell the king, said to the guards, that I have come to heal his daughter. Well, the king admitted him. Oh, look, there we go. We've got Margaret. Hold on one second. I'll come back with that story in just a minute. Let me welcome Margaret on. Margaret,
greetings.
Welcome. How are you, my dear?
Excellent.
Well, I'm so glad you could make it. Why don't you come on into your story, dear?
Okay, what I have to share this evening is a Grimm's fairy tale. It's called Aler Lara, which means of many different kinds of fur. There once upon a time was a king who had a wife with golden hair.
Wow.
And she was so beautiful that her equal was not to be found on earth. It came to pass that she lay ill, and as she felt that she must soon die, she called the king and said, if you wish to marry again after my death, take no one who is not quite as beautiful as I am, and who has not just such golden hair as I have. This you must promise me. And after the king had promised her this, she closed her eyes and died. For a long time, the king could not be comforted and had no thought of taking another wife. At length, his counselors said, this cannot go on. The king must marry again that we may have a queen. And now messengers were sent about far and wide to seek a bride who equaled the late queen in beauty. In the whole world, however, none was to be found. And even if one had been found, still there would have been no one who had such golden hair. So the messengers came home as they went. Now the king had had a daughter who was just as beautiful as her dead mother and had the same golden hair. When she was grown up, the king looked at her one day and saw that in every respect she was his late wife, and suddenly he felt a violent love for her. Then he spoke to his counselors, "I will marry my daughter, for she is the counterpart of my late wife. Otherwise, I can find no bride who resembles her." When the counselors heard that, they were shocked and said, "God has forbidden the father to marry his daughter. No good can come from such a crime, and the kingdom will be involved in the ruin." The daughter was still more shocked when she became aware of her father's resolution, but hoped to turn him from his design. Then she said to him, "Before I fulfill your wish, I must have three dresses. One as golden as the sun, one as silvery as the moon, and one as bright as the stars. Besides this, I wish for a mantle of 1,000 different kinds of fur and peltry joined together, and one of every kind of animal in your kingdom must give a piece of his skin for it." For she thought, "Yet that will be quite impossible, and thus I shall divert my father from his wicked intention." The king, however, did not give it up, and the cleverest maidens in his kingdom had to weave the three dresses, one as golden as the sun, one as silvery as the moon, and one as bright as the stars. And his huntsmen had to catch one of every kind of animal in the whole of his kingdom and take from it a piece of its skin. And out of these was made a mantle of 1,000 different kinds of fur. At length, when all was ready, the king caused the mantle to be brought, spread it out before her, and said, "The wedding shall be tomorrow." When, therefore, the king's daughter saw that there was no longer any hope of turning her father's heart, she resolved to run away. In the night, whilst everyone was asleep, she got up, took three different things from her treasures, a golden ring, a golden spinning wheel, and a golden reel. The three dresses of the sun, moon, and stars she placed into a nutshell, put on her mantle of all kinds of fur, and blackened her face and hands with soot. Then she commended herself to God and went away and walked the whole night until she reached a great forest. And as she was tired, she got into the hollow of a tree and fell asleep. The sun rose and she slept on, and she was still sleeping when it was full day. Then it so happened that the king to whom this forest belonged was hunting in it. When his dogs came to the tree, they sniffed and ran barking around about it. The king said to the huntsman, "Just see what kind of wild beast has hidden itself in there." The huntsman obeyed his order, and when they came back, they said, "A wondrous beast is lying in the hollow tree. We have never before seen anything like this. Skin is fur of 1,000 different kinds, but it is lying asleep." Said the king, "See if you can catch it alive, and then fasten it to the carriage, and we'll take it with us." When the huntsman laid hold of the maiden, she awoke full of terror and cried to them, "I am a poor child, deserted by my father and mother. Have pity on me and take me with you." Then they said, "Alerlera," which means 1,000 different pieces of fur, "you will be useful in the kitchen. Come with us and you can sweep up the ashes." So they put her in the carriage and took her home to the royal palace. There they pointed out to her a closet under the stairs where no daylight entered and said, "Hairy animal, there you can live and sleep." Then she was sent into the kitchen, and there she carried wood and water, swept the hearth, plucked the fowls, picked the vegetables, raked the ashes, and did all the dirty work. Alerlera lived there for a long time in great wretchedness. Alas, fair princess, what is to become of you now? It happened, however, that one day a feast was held in the palace, and she said to the cook, "May I go upstairs for a while and look on? I will place myself outside the door." The cook answered, "Yes, go, but you must be back here in half an hour to sweep the hearth." Then she took her oil lamp, went into her den, put off her dress of fur, and washed the soot off her face and hands so that her full beauty once more came to light. And she opened the nut and took out her dress, which shone like the sun. When she had done that, she went up to the festival, and everyone made way for her, for no one knew her, and thought no otherwise than that she was the king's daughter. The king came to meet her, gave his hand to her, and danced with her, and thought in his heart, "My eyes have never yet seen anyone so beautiful." When the dance was over, she curtsied, and when the king looked round again, she had vanished, and none with her. The guards who stood outside the palace were called and questioned, but no one had seen her. She had run into her little den, however, there, quickly taken off her dress, made her face and hands black again, put on the mantle of fur, and again was Alerlero. And now she went into the kitchen and was about to get to her work and sweep up the ashes. The cook said, "Leave that all alone till morning and make the soup for the king. I, too, will go upstairs a while and take a look. But let no hairs fall in, or in the future you'll have nothing to eat." So the cook went away, and Alerlero made the soup for the king and made bread soup and the best she could. And when it was ready, she fetched her golden ring from her little den and put it in the bowl in which the soup was served. When the dancing was over, the king had his soup brought and ate it, and he liked it so much that it seemed to him he had never tasted better. But when he came to the bottom of the bowl, he saw a golden ring lying and could not conceive how it could have got there. Then he ordered the cook to appear before him. The cook was terrified when he heard the order and said to Alerlero, "You have certainly let a hair fall into this soup, but you shall be beaten for it." When he came before the king, the latter asked who had made the soup. The cook replied, "I made it." But the king said, "That's not true. It was much better than usual. It cooked differently." He answered, "I must acknowledge that I did not make it. It was made by the hairy animal." The king said, "Go and bid it come up here." When Alerlero came, the king said, "Who are you?" "I am a poor girl who no longer has any father or mother." He asked further, "Of what use are you in my palace?" She answered, "I am good for nothing but to have boots thrown at my head." He continued, "Where did you get the ring which was in the soup?" She answered, "I know nothing about the ring." So the king could learn nothing and had to send her away again. After a while, there was another festival, and then, as before, Alerlero begged the cook for leave to go and look on. He answered, "Yes, but come back again in a half hour and make the king the bread soup, which he likes so much." Then she ran into her den, washed herself quickly, and took out the nut and took the silver dress that's silvery as the moon and put it on. When she went up and was like a princess, the king stepped forward to meet her and rejoiced to see her once more. And as the dance was just beginning, they danced it together. But when it was ended, she again disappeared so quickly the king could not observe where she went. She, however, sprang into her den and once more made herself a hairy animal and went into the kitchen to prepare the bread soup. When the cook had gone upstairs, she fetched the little golden spinning wheel and put it in the bowl so that the soup covered it. Then it was taken to the king, who ate it and liked it so much as before, and had the cook brought, who this time likewise was forced to confess that Alerlero had prepared the soup. Alerlero again came before the king, but she answered that she was good for nothing else but to have boots thrown at her head, and that she knew nothing at all about the little golden spinning wheel. When, for the third time, the king held the festival, all happened just as it had before. The cook said, "Fur skin, you are a witch, and always put something in the soup, which makes it so good that the king likes it better than that which I cook." But as she begged so hard, he let her go up at the appointed time, and now she put on the dress which shone like the stars, and thus entered the hall. Again, the king danced with the beautiful maiden and thought she had never yet been so beautiful. And while she was dancing, he contrived, without her noticing it, to slip a golden ring on her finger, and he had given orders that the dance should last a very long time. When it was ended, he wanted to hold her fast by her hands, but she tore herself loose and sprang away so quickly through the crowd that she vanished from his sight. She ran as fast as she could into her den beneath the stairs, but as she had been too long and had stayed more than half an hour, she could not take off her pretty dress, but only threw it over it her mantle of fur. And in her haste, she did not make herself quite black, but one finger remained white. Then Alerlaro ran into the kitchen and cooked the bread soup for the king, and as the cook was away, put her golden reel into it. When the king found the reel at the bottom of it, he caused Alerlaro to be summoned, and then he espied the white finger and saw the ring which he had put on it during the... Then he grasped her by the hand and held her fast, and when she wanted to release herself and run away, her mantle of fur opened a little, and the star dress shone forth. The king clutched the mantle and tore it off. Her golden hair shone forth, and she stood there in full splendor and could no longer hide herself. And when she had washed the soot and ashes from her face, she was more beautiful than anyone who had ever been seen on earth. But the king said, "You are my dear bride, and we will never more part from each other." Thereupon, the marriage was enacted, and they lived happily until their death.
Wow.
It's an interesting story. I thought it was a little bizarre, so I was reading about it. There's an author by the name of Marion Woodman who writes a lot about femininity and archetypes. And she said that becoming conscious of the reality of her situation, it takes Alerlaro out of her unconscious Garden of Eden, which is kind of interesting. It takes on a feminine tidal movement, and gradually she ventures up to the king's corridors and then retreats into her den. It's like she's moving up into consciousness and going back into unconsciousness. Any thoughts? Hello?
We've got about a minute and a half, and I have to say it was a marvelous story. And I hope you'll come back again and tell us another one. That was fantastic, Margaret.
Oh, I'm glad you enjoyed it. Just to close, Carl Jung wrote about the golden dress, that the creative process, so far as we are able to follow it at all, consists in the unconscious activation of an archetypal image and in elaborating and shaping this image into the finished work. By giving it shape, the artist translates it into the language of the present and so makes it possible for us to find our way back to the deepest springs of life.
And with that, we've got about 30 seconds. Do you want to make any other comment, Lillian?
Oh, no, just looking forward to speaking with you next week.
Okay. Well, thank you so much on behalf of Bard's Grove. I want to thank Margaret and Lillian again for joining us. And hopefully next week the gremlins will be out of the system. Thanks a lot, and good night. We'll see you next week. Good night, ladies.
Good night.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. We'll see you next week at the Bard's Grove. Bye-bye.
What you know?